Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main jet.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. This is episode number 130, recorded on January 29, 2018. Your two regular co-hosts are here with me. We have Eric and we have Tim. Eric, how are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Expecting some snow here at Echo Base up in the northern part of the base. So, you know, hey, maybe a bit dusty.
I'm down in the equatorial region where we have no snow.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
And Tim is with us. Tim, how are you tonight?
Hello, boyos. Misa back.
Oh, boy.
it's not even worth responding to.
It's been a while since we've been on that. And it's just, I thought we were over that. I thought we were past that. But
every day is Talk Like Jar Jar Day with Tim.
That's right.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
I feel bad for his wife.
I know, right?
Oh, boy. And Tim, you have brought a guest with us tonight, a very special guest to have on the show. Why don't you introduce our guest?
I have. Oh.
You were supposed to.
Tom, yes. I brought with me Tom Harper.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
You stole my Jar Jar open, so I don't know.
I saw Tom present with Jason Fry back at Star Wars Celebration. And Tom, we'll give him a little opportunity to talk about himself, but Tom has had a career in the military. And he was co-presenting with Jason on the military of Star Wars, which is, you know, kind of funny because we call it Star Wars. It's kind of in the title. And, yeah, we kind of talk, we gloss about a lot of that military aspect. We gloss over it, but we don't really get into the nitty gritty. And these guys had an awesome presentation on the military aspects of Star Wars and comparisons to real life, both historic and present day kinds of things. And it was really interesting. It was quite riveting. So, Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So what Tim didn't say was that panel was at the same time as the Last Jedi trailer premiere. And when I got the schedule, I was ecstatic that I had gotten, you know, my panel pitch selected. We randomly reached out to Jason Fry, who, for reasons unbeknownst to me, agreed to be on the panel with us. And then I saw the schedule and I was like, well, it's just going to be the panelists and then my dad will be sitting in the front chair. The rest of the place will be empty. But, you know, Tim came along, so we had two people there, which was good.
There you go.
Kidding. I just got out of active duty. I'm an Army JAG officer, now a reservist. Served about 7 years on active duty along with my wife as a JAG officer. Did a bunch of different roles there. Eventually, I disobeyed Princess Leia's order right before I did. I got kicked out, and he got – I don't know how that worked. My wife and I just moved to the outskirts of Echo Base north of Philadelphia. And as a lifelong Washington Redskins fan, I can tell you that this is a terrible, terrible place in Eagles country. But no, it's good. I mean, thanks for inviting me out. I appreciate the chance to be on.
Yeah, no, we're happy to have you. With the exception of this past season, I'm a Giants fan.
Have you jumped ship now?
No, I just ignored them this season. After like the first three games, I said, no, I'm out. I'm done.
Yeah, Tim, you know, we have a no talking about baseball policy here on the show.
It's, anyway.
What?
Lou, what do we have?
Uh-oh, Lou's muted. Oh, and I'm not cutting it out either.
Oh boy. No, we have
one of the benefits of having video. So. I can see his lips moving and laugh at him because he's not speaking. That's
you don't
great.
Have to call me out on it though. You know,
that's half the fun. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, I know.
Lou, it's not like calling you out for falling asleep on the mic.
That was only once.
Which never happened.
Mm-hmm.
I receive a regular check from Lou that says that him falling asleep happened. On Mike never happened.
That little memo area of the check, it actually says it never happened.
That's right.
Yeah, it does. And that means it didn't happen. So, yeah, hey.
I tell you what, I am anxious while we have not only another military veteran here, but someone who, unlike me as a military veteran, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. I am very anxious to talk about some of the debate that's been going on in The Last Jedi regarding some of the more military aspects of the behavior of some of the characters, because I'm a little livid with certain portions of the fan community's lack of understanding of some very, very, very basic things.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress.
And we are going to talk about that later. So
yeah,
we are. We'll dig into that a little bit later. Eric, why don't you run us through the news real quick so we can get to the juicy part of our discussion.
Hey, all right.
Can I just say, by the way,
no.
And I know, you like know, Eric's going to like cast stones at me because I'm commenting on a visual since we have the video here.
Mm-hmm.
Tom's chair looks to be the most comfortable freaking chair on the face of the planet. Yeah. He has this giant, cushy leather chair that he's like reclined in. And
you could fit four more people in that. What you don't see, because his webcam doesn't have the field of view, is you don't see the Imperial guards standing to either side of the throne.
This is true. I've got Luke's lightsaber to my right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is the kind of luxury treatment you get when you have to steal your in-law's internet, because my wife and I just moved into a house today, actually, and we don't have the internet. So it's Mooch City around here, so I get the Emperor's throne chair here.
Wow. He's living it up in comfort while we're sitting here. Back pain. That's great.
Stack up cereal boxes.
All right. Well, we do have a lot of stuff in the news, but fortunately for today's episode anyway, a lot of it's not really discussion worthy. It's a lot of just facts. So I'm going to race through them real quickly here. First of all, Carrie Fisher has posthumously been awarded the Spoken Word Grammy for her narration of her book, The Princess Diarist. So that's very cool. Very excited about that.
Yep.
The Last Jedi was nominated for 4 Oscars for Best Original Score, Visual Effects, Sound Editing, and Sound Mixing. Historically, it will probably win a couple of them. And an interesting bit of trivia here, John Williams has now become the most Oscar-nominated person alive.
That's cool.
Yes,
that is very cool.
51 nominations so far. That's awesome. Box office news, The Last Jedi has now passed $600 million domestically. I think it passed that last weekend. But as of right now, it is currently $13 million away from beating The Avengers for 5th place.
Wow.
Expectations are it probably won't go much higher than that, but still, 5th place is, that's pretty darn good.
I would say so.
The Force Awakens made $936 million, just as a point of comparison. Last Jedi is expected to not quite break 700 million. So still, say what you will about the film and how horrible it is, but that's a juggernaut. That is crazy good. It has brought in $1.3 billion worldwide. Jumanji 3 might be taking on Episode 9 in 2019. It might actually open, they're saying possibly the same weekend.
What a Titanic showdown there.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. It really is.
No, not Titanic. They did one movie. There's no sequel to that.
Well, no, they bring the ship back up and they
there is a sequel. It's just
and then they play Jumanji on the raised.
Yeah, there you go. Now, there's no question that Star Wars would beat Jumanji, but arguably it would cut into Star Wars box office so heavily that could really affect things. But
well, you know, that was the thing. We were talking about this last night on Random Chatter, and it's amazing how Jumanji stayed at number one for, 5-6 weeks now?
Mm-hmm.
And or 5 weeks until it dropped to number 2 this week. But, you know, The Last Jedi didn't do that. It's, you know, still made way more money, but pretty amazing. And I think its first week, what did we say last? It was only $36 million first week?
Yeah, I think so.
Just pretty amazing for a pretty low opening weekend to have you know, it rolling along past $300 million now.
Well, it's obviously a fun looking movie. It's got big stars and it's a family movie. It was the biggest family movie at Christmas. Star Wars, keep in mind, is rated PG-13. So for example, I didn't take my son to go see it. I did take my son to go see Jumanji. And
Jumanji
since
was a
then,
great movie.
It really was. I mean, it deserves the renown that it's getting. But there hasn't really been a lot else since then that's been any good either. I mean, there have been a couple of things here. Then, of course, it's Oscar season. But as far as mainstream films, one of the reasons it's doing so well, like if The Last Jedi were PG instead of PG-13, not so divisive with the fans, and Jumanji weren't there, then Star Wars would still be a juggernaut right now. So
we haven't had a whole lot of family stuff come out. No. You've got a lot of more serious, like, Oscar type flicks coming out, or adult movies, but Coco ran its course. You know, I think that came out in mid November. And you had,
wasn't it before Halloween?
Was it? Okay.
Cause well, I think it was before Dia de los Muertos. So, I think it was.
Okay. That would make sense. Yeah. But that, I mean, you had that, big opening, and then you had your normal round of sort of holiday animated movies.
Yeah. For Man, the Star.
So you get that, I think there's another few coming out in February, but it hit it at the right time.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Peter Rabbit looks so bad. Anyway.
Don't disparage Huck.
I so want to talk about that movie, but we can't hear. So the final piece of box office news is that China, where Star Wars generally does not perform very well, they are going to be dropping the words Star Wars from the title of the Solo movie. And
yeah, it's interesting.
I honestly, I kind of feel like that's a good business move. I know that that's sacrilege. I know it's blasphemy, but I'm telling you that will probably improve the reception of Solo at the box office at China. The Last Jedi was pulled from 92% of the Chinese theaters in its second weekend. That's how badly it did.
Yeah, but is taking the name Star Wars off really going to make people forget it's a Star Wars movie and go see it?
No.
I just don't see it. I mean,
we'll see.
That movie?
You're right. I predict that it will. I mean, there's no way to know how it would do with or without, because they're going to pick one and go with it. Right. We'll only ever know the results of one. Right. But I predict that it will do better than The Last Jedi in China. It won't here in the States. Or North America. I mean, I include Mexico and Canada, but it will not do better than The Last Jedi here in the States. But I think it'll do better in China, and I think that the way they market it there is going to have an impact on it.
I don't think you're truly going to see Star Wars gain real traction in China until Rian Johnson's next trilogy. I think Solo and Episode 9 are going to suffer from the same problems that the movies so far have done, which have all been deeply tied to what's out there, stuff that was never released in China, when it came out. And so when you get a chance to make a fresh start, presumably with all new characters, we'll see what he does with it.
Exactly.
I think that's going to be their best chance to do it. And I wonder whether the next, the movies that we've had so far in the next two will kind of sour Chinese audiences to the whole idea before they ever get around to that next trilogy, which would be a shame. But
I think
Chinese audiences are going to be real big on Thrawn, which I'm fully convinced, by the way, is the central character of Rian Johnson's new trilogy. Tom, we'll talk more about that. So yeah, I think it certainly has some potential. It also makes me wonder a bit, since obviously China is a huge market. Do we think? I mean, it's certainly a strategic move to find a popular Chinese actor and pull them into a film, give them a good role. Pull them into a film, and that could really make things pop. That could be a big draw for Chinese audiences.
Yeah, we'll see. I agree with you, Tom. I think that there's too much nostalgia wrapped up in the current Star Wars releases for it really to catch on in a country where they don't have any generational cultural background with Star Wars. There's no relevancy there to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. I liken it. So I had my wife had in our last job had a boss who went and saw it with her family. She's not a big Star Wars fan at all. And so I saw her afterwards. She had been excited to go see it. And I was like, you know, how did you like it? And she said, well, I was just confused about a lot of stuff. She thought that it tied into Rogue One somehow. And so we're having this conversation, and you get a very small handful of people like that across America. But that's the Chinese audience in large part, folks that don't have that perspective that we all have.
Absolutely.
Sure. You know, a lot of this stuff is sailing, all these characterizations, these impactful moments, they're sailing right over audiences' heads, and just, you know, you walk out and shrug.
And I think maybe that's why Solo might be a good first Star Wars movie for that audience, is because you don't necessarily have to have any context. Even with Rogue One, there was still so much context there with the Death Star and everything that had come before. I think the Solo movie might be the good entry point. And I think, again, as a fanboy, this is obviously sacrilege, but I think business-wise, it's probably smart of them to drop Star Wars from the title over there. But we'll see. We'll see. I predict it'll do better than The Last Jedi. The rest of the news here, real quick, we still don't have a trailer for Solo. Still disappointing. I still stand by my prediction that we will not see one in the Super Bowl. Unless it's if it's released before the Super Bowl, which I don't see happening, then will it also air during the Super Bowl? Yes, but it will not premiere at the Super Bowl.
I don't think so either. I mean, Disney has so much other stuff going on for the Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to put Solo in there.
Right. The home video release for The Last Jedi, it has been confirmed via the little tease given in the Star Wars show that it will include director's commentary by Rian Johnson. I know for some of us, that's kind of a big deal.
Yay.
So I'm pretty excited about that. Also, the Target version, Tim, of the Last Jedi will have an exclusive, just like a lot of the different retailers are having various exclusives. I think Best Buy has the Steel Box. Target has an exclusive featurette called Meet the Porgs.
eat the porgs?
Meet. There's an M at the beginning of it. M-E-E-T. That's like Chewbacca. Yeah, no, this is not the Chewbacca thing. This is... It's okay. We'll get Tim a copy of it. We'll let Tim review it. I think it'll be fun.
If you're wondering about parts of the show to edit out, the last, 45 seconds, slice it.
Gone. Well, I could probably cut this part, too. Empire Magazine readers have voted Kylo Ren the 7th greatest movie villain of all time. I think we mentioned that last week in passing.
I don't...
Yeah, it's...
This is okay. So even if I,
who was part of this poll,
even if I liked the character of Kylo Ren, which I'm still not really sold on,
I'm starting to.
He just simply hasn't been around long enough to warrant being the 7th greatest movie villain of cinema in all time. That's crazy. Yeah. That's insane. It's ridiculous. Not that position.
Tim,
20th, sure, not 7th.
I have a confession, Tim. I am not a James Bond fan. I'm not, but I have to argue I could probably come up with 5 James Bond villains.
Goldfinger, Blofeld.
Who are better. First of all, for me to name 5 at all is impressive, but I could probably come up with 5 that are better than Kylo Ren, and that would take care of 5 of the 7 right there.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, there's how many thousands of movies with villains?
It doesn't make sense to me at all. I mean, you look at all the history of villains in movies of all time. I mean, it's like, whoa, how do you make him number 7?
I
smell some voter fraud. Somebody stack that ballot.
Yeah.
I demand a recount.
Real quick, the New York Times has published a book called In a Galaxy Far, Far Away. This is a coffee table book that compiles a bunch of their articles about Star Wars over the decades.
This is cool.
Yeah. If you're into that kind of that archival sort of thing, and it's a good way to look back to see what was being written about A New Hope back when it came out in the 70s and what was being said about the prequels, perhaps before they were released. So,
and actually the first piece they have in here is from 1973, where they did a piece on George Lucas, and he happened to mention some kind of space opera thing that he was writing. Who knows? Nothing will come of it. But he had a mention of that in a piece in 1973, which is really cool.
Cool.
Interesting.
Lucasfilm has been posting animation jobs for production coordinators and an episodic director.
Mm-hmm.
Seems pretty obvious.
Tricky.
Yeah, this is going to be whatever comes after Rebels.
Yeah, I saw these come up couple weeks ago, and it's pretty interesting. First of all, if anyone in the world is looking for a job, go to the Disney job site, because there are like 8 million jobs posted globally in doing anything. Tom, you want to work as an attorney for Disney? They have jobs. I mean, you could be an attorney, you could be an engineer, you could be an architect, you could be a ditch digger, you can be Mickey Mouse, you can, I mean, anything and everything.
Are they hiring podcasters?
At Lucasfilm.
Yeah, I would be a janitor at Lucasfilm in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible. But yeah, so Lucasfilm, it had a handful of new jobs that they've posted in the last few weeks. There were two production coordinator jobs, one episodic director. And when you read into the details of them, they both have to do with a new animated project, which I can only imagine is going to be the successor of Rebels.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I would send creative cease and desist letters all day long for Lucasfilm. So if somebody out there is listening, the most creative.
You'd never run out of work.
I'd write one in the persona of Grand Moff Tarkin. I'd threaten to blow up.
There you go.
In love with the Death Star, you know.
Write one as Jar Jar Binks.
My people.
Please.
Yeah. The army doesn't own me anymore, so I'm free.
There you go. And finally, Leland Shi has confirmed via Twitter that more Legends characters will become canon. He says, in response to something somebody questioned him about on Twitter, he says, "You wouldn't believe some of the Legends characters that will be cropping up in various media in the coming months. Hey, if Tag and Bink can show up, anything is possible." Now, first of all, before anybody starts like going off the deep end here, note he says in various media, comics, video games. But well, the video games have always just not really officially been canon, generally speaking, because with the storylines, they can go off in so many different directions based on, you know, different actions you take that that's kind of always been left out a little bit. Not so much with Battlefront, though, I guess. Anyway, the point is, this doesn't mean in the films. This means in various media. But
I'm excited in this.
Cool.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm excited in the sense that this announcement has me scratching my head and wondering what's to come. But what still continues to frustrate me to this day is that there are people out there within the Bring Back Legends movement, I guess it's called. Yeah. That are still pounding the drum that Disney is somehow doing a terrible job or Lucasfilm with just casting off these books. And I just, the argument is dead in the water now. I mean, you know, if you're not limiting yourself to just the films, there's simply no argument that can be made that they're not treating that entire library with reverence and actively pulling from it in every capacity. So to me, there's not an ounce left to complain about and only a lot of excitement about what's to come.
And what you just said there, they are actively pulling from it. It's not just Thrawn. I mean, I know he's the big topic recently. It's they've been actively pulling things, some small, some larger than others. But they have been referencing Legends lore for a while now, just as they said they would.
So. Yeah. And, so, you know, sometimes it's little things, sometimes it's larger things. They're pulling in everything from planets to characters to ships to just simply concepts and words and terminology and that kind of stuff. I mean, and they even said this when they first decanonized it, if you will. They said that they would still draw from it. I mean, there's a couple decades worth of great creative material that it would be foolish for them to just, you know, throw it all in the shredder and walk away and say, we'll build something new. There's really fantastic stuff there. And I mean, those are kind of like little Easter eggs for us, for folks who read the old EU books, to see these little things and say, hey, I remember that from this book. And it kind of makes you feel good that they're doing that, because it's more familiarity of the old Star Wars into the new. And I think it's a nice bridge and it's a nice acknowledgement of all that creativity and all that talent that has gone into Star Wars in the past.
Yeah.
My very favorite so far. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say my very favorite so far, this is going to be a really odd reference of all, you know, Thrawn and all these big gears so far that have come back into place. There was a video game in the late 90s, maybe 98, 99 for PlayStation called Masters of Terras Kasi.
Yes.
It was a terribly awful 3D fighting game, but it was Star Wars. And I loved it as, you know, a teenager and got really angry when I would read bad reviews about it. I'm like, you just stink at this game. But anyway,
it was a hard game.
It was a terribly designed game, but they had in the visual dictionary for The Last Jedi, there's a section on the Praetorian Guards, and sure enough, right in there, there's a little blurb talking about their fighting styles that they are trained
in.
One of them is Terras Kasi. And I read that, and I just had to set the book down, and I like did a backflip in my living room. This video game is now canon.
I remember that game had like to do with some of the combos. There were like 14 button long combos.
Oh, it was insane. It was insane. I've got carpal tunnel to this day from that.
Right.
But the cool thing was you could unlock characters and outfits, which I thought was awesome.
It had some goofy characters on there, but I'll never forget the first time fighting Darth Vader as an end boss. And I like had almost defeated him. And then these maps that they had were typically all on a platform with no safety barrier.
Right.
And I was Luke, and I did a little roll and rolled right off the edge.
Oh,
and he
right
the camera, and he said, "All too easy." And I
and then you start dropping F-bombs.
That's all canon now. That battle, that's canon. So it's,
Well, I tell you what, I know a lot of people are itching to get Revan brought into canon, but if you guys had to, before we move on to the meat of the show here, if you guys had to pick one character that you wanted officially brought into canon, who would it be? I know for me, it would be Corran Horn. From Stackpole's X-Wing books.
That'd be a good one to have,
That's mine.
That would be yours too, Tom? Why?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is it you like about him?
You know, I just, as a kid growing up, even though I decided to join the Army and not the Air Force, there was something about pilots. I think Top Gun was the first movie that I latched on to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been a while since I've read any of them, but the X-Wing series was a big part of my life growing up in the 90s. And Corran, you know, Wedge, favorite pilot on screen, but Corran was the favorite from the books. And, you know, anyhow, I won't dominate the discussion, but Corran all the way.
Lou, what about you?
Who was the character in the Jedi Academy trilogy that was training under Luke? One of the first kids he found.
Kyle Katarn.
He was in the movie with the Sun Crusher.
Was it Kyle Katarn?
Is that his name?
I mean, he was one of the kids.
He's the one that stole the Kit Duron.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Yeah, it wasn't Kyle Katarn. That's the guy from the video game. Kip Duron.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, yeah, be a good
not
one.
That was the way the thing played out, but I think that he'd be cool to see somebody like that. That's, and maybe Ben Solo was really that character being, you know, torn and doing different things. But
yeah, there are hints of him there.
Cool one to bring in, right?
Yeah. Kip Duron's one of the Knights of Ren.
There you go. Yeah.
That could work.
That would be awesome if they did that. That'd be a nice nod if they did that.
You know, you mentioned the Knights of Ren, and I know this is probably old news for some people, but it was confirmed a week or two ago. I had a theory that the Praetorian Guards in The Last Jedi were the Knights of Ren, and Rian Johnson has debunked that. That was not his intention with the Praetorian Guards. The Knights of Ren did not appear anywhere in The Last Jedi. Just wanted to throw that out there. Tim, who would you like to see brought into canon?
Well, I'll say, since you guys said Corran, which may have been mine, because I too was a big fan of iJedi and the X-Wing novels, I would have to say Jaina Solo. Jaina, they developed her into an awesome character, and I'm so bummed because when they made the announcement of the discontinuation, if you will, of the expanded universe, we were like 2 months away from Sword of the Jedi being released. And I hope that manuscript is somewhere, and in some number of years in the future, they actually release that, because that was the book that, like, as they were building through the last couple of like mega story arcs in the EU that they were going through, everything was pointing toward that. Yeah. And, you know, they had really developed her into just this incredible character. She was kind of this perfect nexus of a Jedi with just enough of an edge to her, you know, just dismissive of enough of authority, but she wasn't, you know, she definitely wasn't, you know, anything leaning toward the dark side. She was a great pilot. She just had like this really cool attitude and edge to her. And she was an awesome character. She deserved her own book. And I kind of, if there's any one thing that I feel robbed with the decanonization, decontinuation of the EU, it was that book being taken away from us.
You know, if it's already written, I don't understand why they wouldn't be able to release it as an ebook. There's no publishing overhead. I mean, among Star Wars fandom, because really those are the only people who would read it, this sort of thing kind of markets itself anyway. You let some websites know about it and it's going to be all over the place. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to lose. They've already done all the work. They just have to, you know, dump it on Amazon and 45 minutes later, rake in the money.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And as an ebook, you know, they could charge $3.99, $5.99, $7.99 for it. People will, I mean, it will break Amazon.
I mean, it's pure profit at that point because all of the development has already been done.
Oh, so, and it's already been paid for.
Right.
I mean, they already paid Christy Golden? Was it Christy Golden?
I want to say it was, but I'm not sure.
So she had already been paid for submitting her manuscript. So that's done, you know, and even if it still never went through its final edits, that's fine. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Call it a draft. We're not going to care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't count now anyway. So
exactly.
All right, Lou or Tim.
Oh, Lou, do you want to, intro no, this? You want me to?
No, I'll let you run this one.
Okay.
You got the mic.
All right. So there's a couple discussion topics that I kind of, you know, knowing Tom's background, both his legal background and his military background and his interest in the military aspect of Star Wars, wanted to talk about a couple of those things that Eric mentioned earlier about some of these military focal points in The Last Jedi. And some of these things we've talked about here on Echo Base. Some things have led to some really great and rather prolific discussions, Mike, on Slack. And we've seen a lot of this stuff kicked around social media. We've really seen a lot of attention paid to some of these different things. So there's a few things that I kind of want to, you know, prompt over to Tom to get his take on. But before we do that, Tom, just, you know, could you take a little bit and tell us what your general impressions were of The Last Jedi?
I really liked it. The way that I would encapsulate it is that Rogue One was the movie I dreamt of as a little kid. The Last Jedi was the movie that I've been craving as an adult. Wanting a contemplative thinking man's Star Wars. I think so thinking man's Star Wars is the bumper sticker that I would put for this one. I really, really like it. And it's gotten better with repeat viewings for me. You know, I'm certainly not a shill for everything that they've put out. I've got my beef with some of the stuff that, you know, some of the material that's come out, movies or otherwise, but, Last Jedi, despite some of its flaws, I really, really liked overall. I would put it, I'm a sucker for nostalgia, so I will never rank a movie higher than the original trilogy, but it's a horse race for me outside the original trilogy between The Last Jedi, Rogue One, and Revenge of the Sith. You know, I any given day, I jockey any one of those into fourth place, which is, for me, that's high praise.
Sure. So probably the first thing I'll throw at you here, and I know Lou and I had a lot of discussion on this. It must have been an episode that Eric wasn't on, Lou, when we talked about the
feedback
the
episode
Holdo maneuver.
Right. Yeah, I remember it might not have been. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because Eric was out sick for a couple weeks. So, yeah, we had a discussion on kind of what's been called the Haldo maneuver, that being Vice Admiral Haldo's single piloting of their fleet command ship into hyperspace, basically aimed at Snoke's flagship, and cleaving it, you know, cleaving a solid third off of that ship. It's and just to kind of give a little bit of context, the discussion that Lou and I had was that it's really like a serious game changer for this to happen as a tactic within Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
What are some of your thoughts on this, Tom?
That was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Tactically speaking, I think it's a real double-edged sword of a maneuver. I thought it was made out of an act of absolute desperation. Mm-hmm. If Holdo hadn't done it, the Resistance fleet, the rest of them in those escape pods, they're all done for, right? So yeah. Anybody that's criticizing this maneuver, saying it's not realistic, this or that, I don't know how you wanted something to end. I mean, she's not going to come up and try to broadside the Supremacy and the rest of the First Order fleet, the 30 odd Star Destroyers that they had. So I thought it was really, really fitting for her character and brought the arc between her and Poe close. And there's a scene right after the great one where it goes silent and you see all the Star Destroyers split, where you see through the viewport, you see Poe's reaction and you see Leia's just sad resignation mm-hmm. at the whole situation. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a great, I would get that blown up into a fathead and put that screenshot on the wall, but it's great. It's a double-edged sword because that's the Resistance's only remaining capital ship, right? I mean, you know, those other little cruisers that were alongside were just little plankers. But yeah. That's their sole big ship that's able to do any real damage. And so, not only are you sacrificing a huge, huge weapon that you have, both in its firepower and in its sort of combat projections, you've lost effectively an aircraft carrier here. Mm. But it's risky, right? I don't know that you could pull off that move against a smaller ship. It just so happens. I find it really kind of ironic that Snoke chooses to operate off of the Supremacy because he's I guess the explanation is that seeing the Death Star and how the Emperor ended up perishing, he was hesitant to operate off of a single base, so he gets this big ass ship instead. Excuse mm-hmm. my language. And ultimately that's his downfall because it's a huge bullseye in the middle of space there for Holdo to ram it right through. But had they, it's a risky move, right? If she misses, if she's off in her calculations or mm-hmm. whatever, and she misses and maybe takes out a few Star Destroyers, they've lost the ship, they've lost her, and the rest of the escape pods have no protection there. So,
sure.
So and there are two.
You actually,
go ahead, Tim.
You bring up an interesting point, Tom, because she certainly could have missed. The Nava computers are not, at least our understanding of them in universe, the Nava computers are not intended to like aim at a target. The Nava computers are intended to take you along a hyperspace lane from point A to point B. Yep. So essentially she, I'm guessing she had to manually aim this ship. Just like firing a gun, if you're off, if your mm-hmm. barrel is off by a centimeter here, 100 yards away, you're off by 5 feet.
Yeah.
Well, so, that's a big deal. She absolutely could have missed. So, I think that's a big issue, and that shows a lot of talent there. She could not have fought them off because that would have required a crew to operate the weapon systems and all that, which as far as we know, there really is not an automated platform of any sort to effectively engage in combat, especially for a capital ship like that. She may have held off the the First Order fleet for a couple of minutes, but it wouldn't have taken them long to overcome that ship.
Well, so there are two big complaints that I've seen other than the whole, you know, would she have actually done this, blah, blah, blah. And I don't really think there's any real issue there. But number one, it is the Interdictor class Star Destroyers have now been brought into canon. And the idea is that the way hyperspace travel works in Star Wars is that if the Nava computer determines you're going to be flying into a gravity well, it doesn't let you. And so the whole point of an Interdictor Star Destroyer is that it simulates a gravity well, it simulates a planet, so you can't escape. They've got you trapped. Right. So how did she manage to do this with a ship that size there? So the question is it just that it didn't register as a large enough mass to prevent her from going through it, or did she somehow override it? So there's that question slash complaint that's out there. And then the other one is, Tom, you mentioned that this is basically like flying an aircraft carrier into something, and that's a really accurate example. One person can't really do a lot with an aircraft carrier. And so the argument is, well, if one person can basically take the ship, turn it around, initiate a hyperspace jump into another ship, Tim, as you said, with a system that's designed to avoid obstacles as opposed to aiming for them, why do you need a crew?
Yeah. Well, to the first point, I see it as an override mechanism that she's tripping. I think it's the valid criticism, right? I think it's a pretty, whoever came up with that is really thinking about the Star Wars universe in a way that I find really awesome. I would have them over to my house and play a round of X-Wing or something. But I think there's an override system. Think about how many times we've seen some crazy stuff with hyperspace. Just in Force Awakens, Han jumps to light speed out of the Aravana cargo freighter, right? You know, he goes from zero to light speed. Yeah. We've never seen that before. Right. And then he comes out of hyperspace onto Starkiller base. We've never seen that before. That kind of, I don't know how he managed to break or whatever. I think about this in terms of the way storytelling can be molded to fit something. And to me, it's not beyond belief that there would be an override mechanism on the Raddus for her to be able to shut off those alarms and ignore it to be able to do something like that. And as I'm talking about this, I think about in Rogue One, as they're escaping Jedha, and K2 is not done with the calculations, but Cassian throws the U-Wing into hyperspace no matter what. So, it's possible, right? I think that's the great thing about the story group and the folks that come up with this stuff is they think outside the box. And there doesn't have to be an explanation. We can go back and find plausible things for this. Or these little nuggets they sprinkle into the visual guides. To the second part, I think you can man ships with skeleton crews. I'm not a Navy guy, so somebody can feel free to come in the comments to this and just snipe away. But I think a ship can certainly be operated with some type of skeleton crew. I absolutely agree that she didn't have any shot to run the weapon systems, anything like that in an automated system. But it's not far-fetched to me that she can turn the ship and then push it to hyperspace. You see Poe, who's ready during his little mutiny, ready to push it to hyperspace, and he's just right behind the command chair. There's a reason he holds up on the bridge there, the auxiliary bridge, whatever they're using, because he's right by the little lever. So,
trying to run sensor systems. She's not trying to figure out, which decks have taken which damage. She's not trying to run the shields. I mean, there's a whole slew of things that you need a crew for that she's not doing. She's basically taking the joystick and turning it towards something, pointing it there, and then hitting the thruster. So I'm kind of with you there. What she's trying to do is not really that complex necessarily.
No, and I think about it too, is it plausible that all of this stuff is right in one chair, conveniently located? I don't know. In real life Star Wars, I guess, would she have to run around the bridge and do all these things? But think about it. We're watching a movie, right? And to a certain extent, the storytelling has to fit that mode. And so you're not going to have Holdo running around doing something like that. You need to show her in this poignant moment where the focus is less on the tech and all this stuff and more on the emotion of the moment.
You know how many people I've heard complain about A New Hope when Han Solo's flipping all the switches and stuff like that and doing things that don't seem to really have any effect on the flying of the ship? You know how many people I've heard complain about how ridiculous it is because none of those switches do anything? None.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yep.
So
there's that part.
Come on.
There's that part in Family Guy's in Blue Harvest where he's like, yeah, I know a few maneuvers. And then he's like, what lazily drifting to the left?
Yeah. Oh, that was great.
Yep.
Absolutely.
But it really does come down to that. It's storytelling. So,
yeah.
There are some of us who are such, we want to live in that world so badly that we want that world to be real. And we know about our own real world that certain buttons and certain switches and certain command systems for larger vehicles have to be handled a certain way. So we get upset when we don't see that in our fiction. But it's a story. The stuff on screen are devices to perpetuate the storytelling. And we lose sight of that sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And some of it you just have to go with and say, okay, yeah, they're doing this and it's going to let the ship go to hyperspace. And we don't know, you know, obviously we don't know how hyperspace works because it doesn't exist. So it exists in the writers' minds and whatever they want to make happen happens.
Yeah. I will say that every time that I've seen the movie, I think it's been 7 times now, that moment where she jumps to light speed and the sound goes out and you just see the Supremacy Snoke ship get split and the rest of the Star Destroyers get split, that is the one moment in the entire movie that every person in the theater, no matter how big or small a fan they are, goes silent and lets out a little gasp. Uniformly. And that says all that I need to know. I don't need the movie to be, you know, pitch perfect in terms of tech and stuff like that to
it's a different movie.
Feel the impact. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great scene.
And it's actually Pitch Perfect 3 right now. So
that's true.
It's a different movie. But
okay, I want Tom to UCMJ the hell out of Poe right now. Can we move on to that? You know, explain in layman's terms, just because this is kind of relevant to it. What is the UCMJ?
Yeah, so it is short for the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Just like we have in every state in America and the federal system, we have laws that we follow, right? Criminal laws. Don't murder people. Don't steal things, right? Those are crimes that you can commit. The military, you got to follow all those rules, obviously, but it's got its Uniform Code of Conduct, right? So it's a body of what we call statutes, which are the rules that we have to abide by. The vast majority of them look like rules we're used to every day. So there's a charge for murder. There's a charge for larceny, so stealing stuff. Some of the things are very military specific. So folks out there that have heard of AWOL, that's absent without leave, that's a military specific crime, right? You're on duty as a service member. You can't just leave unless you're given the okay by your commander. And so it can be a crime if you do it.
And that's a really important point too. This isn't like your HR handbook at whatever, you know, corporate job you work at. This stuff is legally binding.
Yeah. They are federal offenses. So if you get, folks have heard the term court-martial, right? A court-martial is not this, darkened room with some shadowy panel in Guantanamo Bay. It is a full federal trial, right? Mm-hmm. So when you hear that somebody gets court-martialed, they are charged with a crime, whether it's a military-specific one or not. They're put on trial. There's a jury there made of military members and a judge who's an attorney and also a military officer. And at the end of it, if you get convicted, you've got a criminal conviction. It's a criminal record, just like if you got convicted in a civilian court, and you can go to jail. So, and in addition to a lot of other, penalties, fines, demotions, all that sort of stuff. And so, we know that they haven't fleshed it out because my dream of a Star Wars legal drama has not yet come true. We know this stuff exists in the Star Wars universe. We know that there's a military justice system. That's what we call it in the real world. You've seen it played out a little bit in movies, but I go to the Clone Wars. There's a phenomenal example of this right in the end of season five, where Ahsoka gets effectively court-martialed. The Jedi Order has their own trial for her, and then she's effectively court-martialed by the Republic at the end. And right. You know, we see how that all plays out. And across the board, the Rogue One visual dictionary is just littered with examples of these rebels that were facing court-martial or this or that. So the world is alive and well. We just need somebody to come out there and write a Star Wars legal drama, and then all my dreams will come true.
Yeah.
But yeah, Poe's in some trouble. It's safe to say.
Yeah. So that's why I wanted someone to kind of explain to people what, you know, why there are so many people out there who are so upset about Holdo because why didn't she just explain what her plan was? And Poe had every right to step up and you know, take actions into his own hands. And every time I say, well, no, that's not really how it works. That's mutiny. That is like a ridiculously severe military crime. There's this, yeah, but it's justified when they're not telling you what you're dying for. And I'm like, no, commanders don't ever tell you what you're
not how that works.
Right. So yeah, no. First, thank you for kind of explaining the context or the way in which the military has a structure for this. It is legally binding. There are criminal penalties. Tim, I'm sorry to interrupt and all that. I thought kind of getting that context out there.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. It's a nice introduction to this. So we obviously have that, which we've alluded to, and certainly if you've seen the film, you know what we're talking about. We have this issue really starting right off from the get-go with Poe defying a direct order from Leia to not continue this attack on the First Order. And then he comes back and Leia slaps him. She demotes him. And then after Leia gets sucked out into the vacuum of space and then saves herself and then she's in a coma, then Holdo, Vice Admiral Holdo, is brought in and introduced as the in the line of succession as the new commander of the Resistance, or really what's left of it. And Poe seems to have some serious issues with Holdo, and he doesn't think that she knows what it is that she's doing. Now, as a plot element, I understand why they did that, because it's meant for the audience to have doubts about Holdo, and for the audience to have reservations about our faith in terms of what she's doing and some mystery behind it and really wondering what the heck it is that she's doing. So there is certainly a plot point to that. But taking that story aside, and there's been a lot of discussion, particularly in social media, on this whole dynamic. And so, Tom, really interested to hear your thoughts on this whole string of interactions and actions amongst these three.
So I'll separate my thoughts. I'll touch on my thoughts about Poe's general interaction with Holdo in just a second, because I think that's very poignant with some stuff that's going on real world right now in the U.S. military. But to take up sort of the legal issue, right, at the beginning of the movie, you see him shut his radio off after Leia orders him to cut off his attack and return to the Raddus when he's attacking the Dreadnought. And then later in the movie, you see him commit one of the most serious crimes in the UCMJ real world, and really the most serious crimes in any military in the world, which is a mutiny. Poe is very lucky that there are like seven Resistance members left by the end of this movie, because I think that's the only thing that saves him. That, and then you know, the fact that they're being hunted by the entire First Order fleet. He is very, very fortunate to have those circumstances playing in his favor. And what I will tell you, we talked about the framework of the UCMJ. A really interesting aspect of it is that in the civilian side, if you were to go out and go steal a bunch of copies of The Force Awakens from or the Star Wars Holiday Special, because that's a much more desirable item from your local Walmart, right? You're getting the Blu-rays, the good stuff. The local civilian attorney, so the district attorney, would have the discretion to determine what to do with you. So that's a lawyer in an elected position deciding how to handle your case. Is she going to prosecute you? Is she going to decline and let some other process play out? That's not how it is in the military. Military commanders have that discretion. So while I was a prosecutor for 2 years in the military, I didn't get to decide what happened to any cases. I got to recommend. I would get a call from investigators to say, hey, this crime happened. I wouldn't get to tell the investigators what to do with the case. That call, that authority lay with the commanders. And so when you see Leia make the decision to demote and then publicly slap Poe, which was awesome, by the way. She was exercising her discretion, right? That was a real world connection right there, because that's her right and her authority. I could be right in her ear telling her, ma'am, we've got to court martial him. He lost the entire resistance bomber fleet as a result of the actions, XYZ. She could say, Captain Harper, got it. Thanks, but I'm going to do it my way because of the circumstances. And really, circumstances drove her decision. Circumstances drive the legal advice that you would give in a situation like this. The reason Poe's in big trouble for that first part is that disobeying the lawful order of a superior is one of the biggest crimes that you can have. The moment that anybody comes in the military and raises their right hand to take the oath, part of that oath is that you will obey the orders of the officers appointed above you. Right, Leia is a general, very high-ranking officer. So her order to Poe to break off that attack, no matter how much he disagreed with it and thought that they had a shot to destroy that dreadnought, it didn't matter. Right, his personal objections, right. his personal, like how he was sizing up the situation, doesn't matter. Right, he is under a legal obligation to peel off and come back to the Raddus immediately. And the moment that he doesn't do that, it doesn't take him getting the bomber fleet in order and continuing his attack. The moment that he switched off that radio, the crime was committed. And the penalty for a crime like that is really, really severe. That the willful disobedience, if I can talk right, of a superior commissioned officer in a time of war can net just a huge prison sentence if you're court-martialed for it. But like I said, he's lucky under the circumstances to have just gotten demoted. Flashing forward, the mutiny, real world, if you commit a mutiny in a time of war, that's punishable by death. So you talk about capital offenses. We only have a handful of those crimes that can net the death penalty in the real world. The military has a few extra. Some of these are really military-specific crimes. But you can understand why it's such a big deal. If you, as a subordinate, take it upon yourself to by force overthrow a superior officer, I mean that cuts against the everything that the military stands for, and it's extraordinarily dangerous. And so, they stick these high penalties on there as a way to deter people from doing this. But, I understand the criticism. I understand where Poe is coming from in terms of being frustrated that he's not being told every last detail about it. But what I would tell Poe is, as a captain, as a commander, you're not that high on the totem pole, right?
Right.
You're not in command yet, partially because you make decisions the way you do, right? You're a flyboy and making decisions on the seat of your pants. But in any event, I was a criminal defense attorney in the JAG Corps as my last job on active duty, and that's what I do now in the reserves. If Poe walked into my office as a client, I'd be like, oh, geez, how did I get stuck with this case? Because there's not a good defense for him, right? I appreciate people, fans out there that, pound their fist and say, well, Poe made the right decision. He had every right to know and you know, it was defensible that, you know, they could save the fleet and save the Raddus and try to do it his way. That's not Poe's right, though. And none of the criminal defenses to that crime, right? The fact that you disagree with the superior officer, or even if you honestly think that that superior officer is putting you in danger, it's no justification. You know, what I would tell a soldier like that is, you know what? You're in a dangerous line of work. The commander's made a call. Frequently, those calls put you in harm's way and put others in harm's way. But that's why they're the commander. They've been entrusted with that judgment call.
So let me ask this. What is the obligation of a commander to, and I'm not talking morally, I'm talking more sure. legally. What is the obligation of a commander to inform the troops of what the plan is, what the purpose? I mean, obviously you have to have some level of details about what the plan is in order to execute the plan.
Right.
But to what extent do they need that information, and do they need to know why the plan is what it is, and et cetera? What's the commander's obligations there?
Legally, in order to enforce an order, right? So if I want a soldier to obey my order, it's got to be clear. It's got to be a direct order to do or not to do something. There can't be ambiguity in there. So there's a court martial a while back where a superior officer told a subordinate to shut up. That was ruled a clear order to stop talking. Right. As rough around the edges as it may be. On the flip side, there was a court martial, gosh, during the 60s or 70s, where a commander told somebody to settle down in there, that they didn't want to hear from them again. That was ruled to be too ambiguous. Right. What does settle down mean? You know, you sure. could interpret that a different way. There is no obligation of the commander to explain an order. As long as the order is clear cut, unambiguous, and it's to do or refrain from doing something, that's it. You got to follow it. You're not entitled to something. Right. If you talk leadership, you know, what's a good leader to do in a certain situation, you know, you can skin that cat a thousand ways, but sure. there's no legal obligation to bring everybody in and have a little kumbaya powwow, you know, around, you know, the little command console on the bridge there.
So don't get together to have a vote and say, okay, who wants to do the attack? And three guys raise their hand and say yes, and two guys are going, I don't think we should do it that way. That's not the way that works?
That's the way the Air Force does it, but the Army
pretty much.
But you know, the thing I don't get about this whole argument is, I mean, this isn't the first movie in history that's had, you know, a hero of the movie disobey a direct order from his superior officer and win the day.
Right.
And yet we're giving this movie all kinds of crap about it. And it's just like, okay, why are we being so critical of this one?
Yeah. Well, what's left a bad taste in my mouth is I feel like if Holdo had been a male character, I don't know that this debate would be so intense. And I don't want to walk too far into that fire swamp. But the point that I made at the beginning, I said, you know, hey, we got the legal comments and the comments about their interactions. There really is a direct tie into what's going on in the military right now as we speak, because within the last 2 to 3 years, traditional male-only jobs, so combat jobs, have been opened up to females. There's right. I don't know that there are any jobs under current regulation that are restricted without females. There are some jobs that they're still undergoing a sort of a review process and whatnot, but you've got, at least in the Army, female infantrymen out there. So females that have gone through infantry training who, if you go back 5 years, were not able to do that. The first three Army Rangers, so the Army's elite infantrymen that fall into mm-hmm. the Special Forces umbrella, the first three females to graduate from the vaunted Ranger School, those graduated. But there's strain, right? No kind of pivot like that. No matter how long females have been really involved in fighting on the front lines of, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, everywhere else, there's stresses in the real world for that. And I think you see some of that here. I see the whole dynamic as being really critical to Poe's arc, because at the end of the movie, as Luke is talking to Kylo and saying, you know, that the resistance is reborn, where does the camera go? It is zoomed right in on Poe's face when he delivers that line, because through the comics, through the Poe Dameron comic, through the last couple films, Leia's entire, you know, one of her main objectives is to groom him to take over a significant leadership position. And if you're not reading the Poe Dameron comic, you really ought to pick an issue or two up, because it's really, really great and does a great job setting up his character for this movie, because he's not this, he might be great behind the flight stick, but he's not a perfect leader. He bucks Leia's orders again and again. He puts his troops into dangerous positions, and he struggles with his role as a leader. And so I think it's fantastic to see Poe as somebody imperfect in The Last Jedi, but by the end, he realizes the error in his ways, and he's really turned a page. I talked about this being the movie that I wanted as an adult Star Wars fan. Poe's little character arc here is a big reason for that, because he really does develop, I feel like, over those 2 hours.
Sure.
I've got another question regarding the issue of giving orders and such. A lot of people feel erroneously, I believe, that Poe had a right, as we mentioned a few minutes ago, to not follow that order. And I know that the military does have certain conditions under which you are not required to follow an order. You mentioned some of them, the order has to be clear and et cetera, but the military does have a process for determining that someone in command is no longer capable of command, whether they be under duress, a medical issue. And with the resistance, I mean, there's only a handful of people there at this point, so it's not like he can go through a big screening process or anything. But and I know that, you know, the example that keeps coming up is the Nazis. You can't say, well, I was just following orders.
Yeah.
Is it a lawful order? So number one, can you explain again in layman's terms what is the meaning behind a lawful order? And then number two, are there any circumstances in which, like, what would be the parameters for Poe that would have had to have been met in order for Poe to have been justified in doing that from a legal point of view?
So it's about as clear as a Dagobah swamp, right? But if I could condense it to a sentence, a lawful order cannot be illegal. That's like the most lawyer answer I can give in the history of anything. But
A commander cannot tell me to take my gun out and shoot somebody in the side of the head.
Yeah, I can't. So that's a great example. You know, I can't order you to break a law, right? I can't order you to go steal a copy of the holiday special for me because I'm itching to watch all of it. you know, I also
you would change your tune if you actually I'll throw this out here real quick because it's something we mentioned to our listeners before. You can get the holiday special through RiffTracks, RiffTracks.com. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's some of the guys that used to do Mystery Science Theater 3000. So it's the video plus them riffing over top of it, which does make it incredibly more bearable. So RiffTracks.com. I think it's maybe $10 for the whole thing. It's highly worth it. But if you haven't seen it, that's a good way to watch it.
Yeah, and I'll put it. This slipped my mind before, but I'll put in a very shameless plug here. I write for a website called TheLegalGeeks.com. So TheLegalGeeks.com, all one word.
Cool.
And I write a monthly Star Wars piece for them, kind of breaking down some kind of legal issue.
Awesome.
That you see in the films or Rebels. I've done some of the books. But I just published earlier this month part one of a two-parter on Poe. So it's you know, great that we're talking about it right now.
Excellent.
But on the legal issue, I the legality of an order, I touched in it in that early January article. Really, the judgment of what a legal order is, you know, it doesn't get done on the front end, right? So unless something is just blatantly illegal, so I go back to the Vietnam War and the My Lai massacre. So you're told to execute civilians, right? Something that is clearly against the Geneva Conventions. You know, under no circumstances would that be a lawful order. You know, you're absolutely right. You can't claim, as with the Nazis, hey, I was just following orders. I knew it was wrong, right? I knew this was an illegal act. You can't hide behind that shield there. But outside of that, really the judgment for whether an order was lawful you know, if there's any kind of ambiguity come to it, is decided by the judge. It's called a question of law. So that's, you know, a question of fact would be like, you know, was I at the 7-Eleven last night? A question of law is legally, was this, you know, was this order lawful, right? And, you know, it's about as, I said, it's as clear as a Dagobah swamp. I hope I'm like, you know, at least clearing it up a little bit for
folks. I think
folks,
so. But, yeah.
I mean, yeah, but I think Last Jedi context, no, there's nothing in there, you know, Holdo sending out the transports to make for Crait, not an illegal order. You know, they believe that those transports were masked from the First Order, and up until DJ sold out the Resistance, the First Order had no idea that those transports were en route to Crait. And we talked about it being a narrative device here. Holdo knew that Crait existed. Leia knew that Crait existed and that that's where all those ships were heading. Poe didn't. And so we see this from the perspective of Poe, where we're like, she's just sending these little ships off with no defenses and no hyperdrives out to get blasted, right? In reality, that's not what's happening. There's a plan in place. We're just not read in on it.
Right.
And nothing about that's an illegal order. Is it dangerous? Yeah, absolutely. But commanders order their soldiers, order their subordinates into dangerous situations all the time. You know, there are soldiers around the world getting direct lawful orders to go do very dangerous things as we speak. So, you know, Poe may have disagreed and wanted to do it differently, but it doesn't make it illegal.
So, to be clear, the order to launch the ships, the escape shuttles and such, the reasoning that Poe had as to why they shouldn't do that, the taking over of the ship, etc. There is, as a military member, Poe was not justified in doing so.
Is that correct? No, flat out. No, flat out. Would say if. Yeah, if he were to come into my office and spout off about what he thought his defense was and how bad a Commander Holdo was, I would have one of those frustrating defense attorney moments where I stop him and I say, you know, what is not in the UCMJ is the defense of, hey, I disagreed with my commander. You know, so no, I flat out, to me, there's no ambiguity there. And that's coming from somebody who's worked as a military prosecutor and a military defense attorney.
I am so happy right now. I'm thrilled.
Can I close, like, the book on it?
I hope so. And another thing, and I'll try not to rant. I promised myself I wouldn't rant in this episode. Another thing. He knows, as he's talking to Rose and Finn over the comm, he knows that there's another person there. He knows there's a chance that they could all get captured.
Yep.
And he tells them the escape plan. Yep. If he kept his mouth shut and not talked about, even if the channel was encrypted, it's not an open channel, that's fine. But there's someone else there who doesn't have the clearance to know about this. If he kept his mouth shut, then the First Order would not have known about the plan.
Yeah. Information security. It's a big thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Poe's a bad mother.
I mean, I love Poe, but I've never wanted to strangle a character that I've liked so much in a movie. And see, you know, we talked about this before the show. C-3PO. Listeners know that C-3PO and Yoda are probably my two least favorite Star Wars characters, but C-3PO by far the most. I have no use for C-3PO. I love Anthony Daniels. I think his portrayal of C-3PO is incredible. I got mad respect for him. I don't like the character. In this movie, that one line by 3PO, I don't think I can go along with the mutiny. It's not in my programming. I'm just like, yes, I finally have a reason to cheer for 3PO doing something. I just, like I said, I promised myself I wouldn't rant. I'm sorry. I'll stop.
So I think we'll push ahead to what might be some lighter conversation. Although I'm wondering where some of us might go with this. Completely changing topics over to Rebels. And Tom, I pinged you earlier in the day when this popped into my head for the show notes, you said you're a big fan of Rebels, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so
you talk about a lighter topic here. I question marks are popping up in my head about
where
this is gonna go.
I assume you saw the trailer for the second half of season four.
I did, yeah.
Okay. And I know Lou and Eric, you guys saw it too, right?
Yes.
Right.
Pretty impactful. I mean, I've watched it a few times. It starts off with a lot of scenes reflecting on what we've seen for the past 3.5 seasons, and then teases us on some things that we will hopefully be seeing over the next few episodes. I don't want to get into dissecting the trailer here necessarily, but just as a little bit of a pitch for Rebels, Disney XD, everyone hopefully should know that if you're listening to this podcast. This is the final half of season four. It's going to start on Monday, February 19th. And March 5th is when it's going to wrap up with what we're hearing is a 90-minute finale. So we're talking like big time finale here. And it is just so bittersweet because I love this series. It's been a great series. You don't want to see it end, but you know that these last few episodes are going to be really, really meaningful to the story and to the characters. And I love to talk about characters. We know that Hera and Chopper transcend this time period of Rebels because, well, we physically see Chopper in Rogue One, and we hear over the PA system General Syndulla is being called.
And she is present on Hoth, apparently, from the Forces of Destiny cartoon.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's where that came from. Okay. Yeah, that was an interesting
Hoth or Endor
new retcon. I thought it was Hoth.
I thought it was Hoth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's great to see that we have a good prolific character. And I love the character of Hera, so I hope we're going to get more stories, from her moving forward. But we have a number of other central characters, both Rebels and Empire, and some even that might not even be either. And there's a lot of questions as to what the disposition of these characters are going to be. So I'll kind of open this up to everyone here. The first two, and I'm going to tie them together, feel free to talk about them separately. But I'm going to tie them together because they are so closely, their stories and their characters are drawn together quite a bit. Those first two are Kanan and Ezra. And I'm going to split this in asking for your thoughts here. What do you expect will happen, and what do you hope will happen?
Yeah.
And if those two things intersect, that's fine if they're the same thing. But if you think that they are different things, one for story, the other for, you know, your own heart and your love for a character, then, you know, let's hear it. What do you guys got? What do you think about Kanan and Ezra?
Dead.
Yeah, hey, there's the lighter. There's the lighter turn we were looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't the show kind of take a pickup right there?
And well, you know, and Eric, I mean, you're not far off from God, probably the thought that I had after watching the first episode of Rebels, which was, oh, two Jedi, huh? Yeah, no, they're not going to survive this.
Right,
they can't.
Right. I mean, there's the whole storyline of the Purge. So the likelihood, and of course, it's one of those things where all the Jedi were killed. Well, except that one. Except that guy over there. Well, and maybe not that one. So it's like, at what point do you stop making exceptions to the Purge without minimizing the effect of the Purge? So it's like, I'm fine from a literary point of view with them being killed off.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I like Kanan better than Ezra. I feel like Kanan probably should be, you know, he should have the whole hero's death and all that, and Ezra be the generation that moves forward. But really, whatever the end of the story is for these people, they have to be hidden. They have to.
And, Well, and a lot of people argue, what I've heard kind of the counterpoint to this is, oh, well, it's, you know, it's a big galaxy and they could go anywhere. But well, sure, they can. But right now, they're kind of at the center of this fledgling rebellion.
Well, they're going to follow Thrawn to the Outer Regions.
That's my thought, too. But before we even get into that, Lou, Tom, what do you guys think about the fate of Kanan and Ezra?
I think in my heart.
I'm with Eric. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in my heart, I have this image from Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade where they're just riding off on loath wolves, like into the sunset, like that last scene.
Yeah.
Realistically, I see this playing out with, I think Kanan somehow gets captured again, although this, they might go a different direction storytelling wise, because this would be like the third or fourth time he's been captured by the Imperials. But I think something will go wrong in the rescue of Hera, and he will get captured or sacrifice himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think his death will happen before the finale. It will drive Ezra very, very close to the dark side, and you're going to see sort of akin to the Emperor coming to fight Maul and Savage Opress in the Clone Wars. Either the Emperor is finally going to get off the throne and come get involved personally, or he's going to put this to Vader, like, if you are anything to me, you will go finish the job that you failed to do in, what, season one at the end of Rebels, and snuff him out. You know, there may be, I think, maybe an arc where they try to bring him over in some capacity, because I think the Emperor is... he's like a guy that's constantly leasing cars with his apprentices. He's always the next better model. And so
we see the Emperor in the trailer. So
I have visions of this like moment where it's very similar to I want them to do something different, but that scene's so great where Palpatine comes and fights Maul and Savage Opress on Mandalore. I mean, a duel like that would be really phenomenal, but I think they're going to do something a little more creative. But I think Kanan dies early, Ezra in that last 90 minutes. While I would like to see them out there, I think to me it would shrink the universe, shrink the galaxy a little bit if you know these two characters are out there somewhere. So I
could sign on to that plot line. I definitely could. Lou, what do you think?
I kind of think along the same lines of both these two guys. Kanan definitely dies. I hope he dies at Vader's hands. I think that'd be an awesome death for him. Ezra, I think he does go out in the finale. I think he's going to be a big epic death. I don't think he's going to go dark. I think he's just going to get killed off.
The thing, though, is it's still a kids show. It's on Disney XD. And Ezra is the avatar for the children in this show. They cannot kill Ezra here. They can't.
Kids are resilient. Come on.
They can't kill Ezra.
They bounce.
Yeah, they bounce back. I seriously think there's no way that they can kill either Ezra or Sabine in this show. Not a chance.
Yeah, I don't think they'll kill Sabine, but I think Ezra is going to go. But, Eric's probably right. Maybe Ezra doesn't go, but I think he should. I mean, to Tom's point.
Yeah.
And Eric's point, too. I mean, you get the Purge, and now it's like you said, oh, there's this one hanging around, and that guy's over there, and this guy's on that planet. Yeah. No, you can't have that. I mean, I have a hard time with the fact that the entire population of the galaxy forgot about Jedi in the course of 30 years.
Yeah,
I mean they were in charge for thousands of generations, right?
Yeah,
and now what are the Jedi? Who are they?
Yeah, I think Sabine. I don't know how she'll wrap up, but it's less of a problem for me story wise or big picture wise for her to escape and either be a continuing, asset to the rebellion, or really, I mean, they've really set the groundwork for her exit from the rebellion. She's got larger responsibilities there on Mandalore. Mm-hmm. And even with the arc where she's handing off the Darksaber and the leadership mantle, I still think she's got a role to play out there. And potentially one, I would be all for her exiting and living, living at the end of this series. And then we get like a 5-part miniseries comic centered around her adventures afterward or something like that.
Yeah. And Sabine is one of my favorite characters. Yes. I hope we get some continuation of her past rebels. I agree. I mean, she's really torn between her responsibilities to her clan and her home planet, as well as the rebellion. And I think that she's either something's going to tip the scales for her to go to Mandalore, whether it's that commitment to Mandalore or that she sees her friends around her in the rebellion, things happen to them and she maybe gets a little disillusioned or ultimately just kind of too stressed and says, I can't be here anymore. I got to go. And goes off to Mandalore. And I think that there's some really cool plot line there because, you know, through the original trilogy, we don't see anything with Mandalore. So it's kind of an open playground and there's a lot of potential for some great stories for her.
Well, I think, yeah, I think that opening up the world of the Mandalorians is a missed opportunity so far. I mean, they started to do it in Legends, and I honestly haven't been all that thrilled with how they did it. But at least they did something with it. And I think that this is a prominent culture within Star Wars lore that now with the reset with the canon, the culture is untapped. Yeah, you've got the Clone Wars stuff, but now we're in different generations. We're forward. There's something going on with Mandalorians. What is it? Some of us really want to know. And so I think that this is a whole subgenre or a subculture within Star Wars that's really untapped potential.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
Sorry, just a final thought that popped into my head on Sabine. I think you're going to see a really epic final 90 minutes, and I think as Hera sort of in the wake of probably a pretty emotionally gripping episode renews her resolve despite tragedy to stay on with the rebels. Mm-hmm. I think I can't remember who said something along these lines, but I think Sabine, you know, we'll have an emotional like goodbye and part ways and go back and say, I can't keep fighting this fight.
Yeah. Especially since Hera really kind of took Sabine under her wing to really train her to be a leader and embrace this rebellion and do bigger things. And we saw Sabine really mature quite a bit through the series. So how about Zeb? I mean, do you guys think a similar situation with Zeb where he may go off with the remainder of his species to kind of protect them? Do you think that something's going to happen to him otherwise? What do you think is going to happen to Zeb?
I don't really care about Zeb. I mean, you know,
I'm sorry to say that.
Character,
like,
though.
I mean, I like the character. He's good in the show, but I'm like, in the grand scheme of things, to me, it doesn't really matter what he does and where he goes.
Fair enough. And I can't disagree with that. I mean, I don't think that as a character, he is as pivotal or important, but he's a good supporting character.
That's the thing. He's a support character. He's a wonderful character. I love him. I love Steve Bloom's portrayal of him. Mm-hmm. Zeb is a favorite of mine, but he's not a leader. He doesn't lead the Mandalorians. He is not one of the last remaining Jedi. Yes, he's one of the last remaining of his race, but like there's Jedi and they're up on a pedestal. There's Mandalorians and that's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a thing. He's there to support the rest of the crew. And we haven't seen as many stories focus on him as we have the others. So he's not, again, from a literary point of view, he's not as critical overall as some of the other characters. You could argue Hera is a supporting character too, but she has taken such a position of leadership that, hush you. Though, how awesome is Vanessa Marshall that she autographed your Hera figure, say, with bus driver?
She drives a bus.
I mean, that's all. Vanessa is incredible. Anyway,
she really isn't, and she enjoyed that when I told her about that, and she definitely signed it. The bus driver was fun.
Oh, she's awesome. Yeah. But like, she's a support character too. But she's like, as far as individual characters go, she is one of two characters out of any of these that I care enough about that I would be angry if they had killed Hera off. Like, Hera lives, and with the exception of Thrawn, I don't care about the rest of them.
Sure. Yeah. Tom?
Maybe Zeb has his own Hodor moment. How dark would that be? I think, no.
I like that.
That's harsh.
The way Zeb is written, I think the way Zeb is written and portrayed, with the exception of some really poignant moments in a few of the episodes where he's interacting with Kallus, where he's talking about the fall of Lassan and whatnot, he's sort of a comedic relief play. He's like a foil, like a big brother character for Ezra, right? And I think it would, you talk about it being a kid's show. I think that probably factors into Zeb's fate, right? He's also a character that I have no problem wrapping my brain around that he could just be out somewhere. I mean, they're not.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be twisting the galaxy to have Zeb live and be a soldier in the Rebel somewhere.
Sure.
He just doesn't matter.
Yeah, he could live. He could die. He could be with the Rebellion. He could go be with his people. He could do any. I'm kind of okay with any of it. Speaking of supporting characters, but one that's been with us for a long time. How about Rex? What do you think is going to happen to our loyal soldier?
Don't care. Didn't they confirm that he's on Endor? Or
was that whatever debunked? Happened with that? There was talk about it, and then there was a controversy that boiled up that I will not get us into.
We talked about it. Yeah, we talked about the race issue quite a bit here a number of months ago when that came up. And it's good that you brought that up. Not necessarily the race issue, but the point that, apparently the character continued. I forgot about that when I added him to our list. So if that's still going to hold up, then presumably he stays with the Rebellion. We see him continue on through to Endor. And
and that's fine. I don't feel like we need to see any more of him beyond that. Like we know where he ends up. He was in a very heroic battle. Great. That's awesome. Go Rex. Like we don't need weekly updates on what he's doing.
Yeah. Overall, no,
they backed. So when the controversy came out, I forget who shared sort of the images and the mock-up of him. But they backed off very quickly and explained, this is not confirmed in any way. And quite frankly, I'm okay with that. We talk about shrinking. I don't need these spider webs connecting every piece of the galaxy. I don't need, Han's strike team to suddenly become the Dirty Dozen, the greatest hits of the Rebellion, right? It's okay for it to be a bunch of Rebel Special Forces, right? Just their name soldiers, right?
How about one of our Fulcrum characters, Agent Kallus.
You mean what, Kallus?
what do you think's going to happen to Kallus?
He'll make a heroic sacrifice. He's going to die. That's how this type of story writing works. They're going to kill him. They're going to find a heroic moment where he's going to sacrifice himself for the good of the other characters, and that's going to bring his whole redemption arc to a final close.
Okay, that's fair.
Yep,
that's fair, Tom.
I will say that there was a very funny moment for me, at least, like a very ironic moment. There's that episode back before December where with Saw Gerrera and he and Mon Mothma have that fiery confrontation over like breaking the rules and stuff. So she's talking about Saw breaking every rule in the book. Mind you, Kallus is standing feet away from her as like one of the biggest Imperial war criminals ever. I think I think he is the stick in Thrawn's spokes that's going to come back. You've seen this interplay between them as Thrawn has tried to ferret him out and finally does so. Yep. I think he gets the last laugh, but it's going to be at the cost of his life. So I agree with you.
Sure.
One thing that will upset me if they do this with him and this kind of blends into to Thrawn, which we haven't gotten to yet either, but if they use Kallus as a replacement for Rook from the book. So in the books, I mean, if this is a spoiler to you, I'm sorry, it's been how many decades now? But in the original Thrawn trilogy, the Nogri play a bigger role. Mm-hmm. And Rook ends up killing Thrawn on behalf of his people. And Rook is in Rebels, but he has such a ridiculously small part that if Rook kills Thrawn, it's silly. It's silly. There's just no setup for it. So if they then transfer that role to Kallus and have Kallus kill Thrawn in a similar way as to what they did with Rook, I could kind of see the possibility of them going that route, but that would really upset me if they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys mentioned Thrawn, and I'm going to bundle together these two characters, even though we have one that's a real major character, one that's much more minor. But they kind of started their stories together. If you guys read the Thrawn novel, they really tied in the story of Governor Price in with Thrawn's story. And we saw through Rebels so much of Price kind of tagging along with Thrawn. So I'll mention the two of them together again. You guys can separate them if you want. What do you think is going to happen to Thrawn and Price?
I'll say this. Nobody, whether Timothy Zahn himself, or I forget who was in charge of Lucasfilm's book division back then, back in 1991 when the Thrawn trilogy first came out, Heir to the Empire, I don't think they saw that these were going to be New York Times number one best-selling books for as long as they were, that every Star Wars book that came out after that were going to be New York Times bestsellers, that this was, you know, we were looking at multiple hundreds of Star Wars fiction novels coming out over the following decades. I think that if they had, they wouldn't have killed Thrawn.
Right.
I think the biggest mistake ever made in Legends was killing off Thrawn. They have a chance to undo that mistake now. If they kill Thrawn in Rebels, and he hasn't been, I mean, he's been prominent in Rebels. He hasn't had a lot of screen time compared to, I mean, like if this is his death in this series, I feel like it's going to be a waste again. And they're not going to have learned from their mistake the first time around. And I can forgive them their mistake the first time around. I didn't figure it would have been all that big either, it being the entire expanded universe. But now that they know, and now that Star Wars has become this juggernaut of a franchise beyond the films, they're not just shooting themselves in the foot if they kill him, they're shooting themselves in the skull. I mean, that's going to be a big mistake. I pray that they don't kill Thrawn. As for Price, I've grown to like her character. I like it when they use characters in multiple forms of media. And you get a sense that this is an active character with an active effect in the world around, well, universe around them. I'd be okay with her sticking around, but we also haven't invested so heavily in her that we would be all that upset if she goes.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them both stick around. I mean, I think you're right. They are not going to kill Thrawn.
No. Thrawn has greater purpose.
Yeah, I mean, they brought him into the new, you know, canon because he's a popular character. I like the way they're handling him, where they don't give a lot of screen time to him. He's there. He's controlling things. He's doing what he needs. You know, he's being the tactician that he is.
And there's been foreshadowing
extremely well. Yeah,
there's been foreshadowing for the whole Unknown Regions thing, at least to some extent.
Yep, and they got to set up that trilogy you want, Tim.
Exactly. This is going to be Rian Johnson's trilogy. Thrawn is going to be the central piece of it.
Rian just doesn't know
totally
it yet.
Totally convinced of it. Tom, what are your thoughts on Thrawn and Price?
In my heart, I would love to see a scene where Palpatine. So they have their sort of penultimate battle. It resolves win, lose, or draw for Thrawn. Thrawn gets recalled to Coruscant to go before the Emperor, and he tells him he has need of him on a special project, and he sends him out to start the groundwork for you know, what will ultimately be the contingency, and then, you know, the seeds of the First Order. You know, that leaves them open. I think if Thrawn were a part of the First Order, you would have seen him. But yeah, you can wrap that story up. You don't write yourself into a corner by sending him out there. You know, as much as I would like to see him stay a part of the, you know, Imperial Navy proper, I would really struggle with why he would remain an active part. It's a big galaxy, but, you know, Return of the Jedi, if Thrawn is in the Imperial Navy, Piet is not commanding Imperial forces, you know, above Endor. No way.
Yeah. And actually, Tom, I like your idea of the Emperor recalling Thrawn. And I think it would be an incredible, like, pivotal thing, because it could really build up to this where Thrawn is basically on the precipice of crushing the rebellion. And then the, you know, little hologram of the Emperor comes up in Thrawn's ship and says, "Hey, now's the time. I need you back on Coruscant." And Thrawn says, but I'm about, this is going to be done. Just give me a minute. And the Emperor's like, "No, now."
Yeah.
And Thrawn says, "Okay, battle's done. Turn around." They go away, and the rebellion's left. They're like, "We almost lost, and we're good. We're cool.
Where'd Thrawn go?" No, so, I like that. I like that a lot, because if there's one thing that the story group has done very, very well, it's inserted these payoff moments, these connections, to make it very worthwhile to the folks who read the books or the comics or whatever. None of that is essential, right? You can watch the movies alone or Rebels alone and get enough out of it, but they insert those payoff moments. And what better payoff moment would there be for folks across the board, films, comics, books, otherwise, than to have a scene like that? I'm getting excited just thinking about it here.
Oh yeah. Oh, so am I. So am I. And it leads so awesomely into the Rian Johnson Thrawn trilogy. So last character here, and this is, I mean, arguably one of the biggest ones, Ahsoka lives, question mark. Are we going to see Ahsoka come back in these last episodes?
Yes. I mean, she's, what are you going to do? You've got, the story's not about her.
Right.
You obviously can't have her come in and save the day, because then you diminish the heroic nature of the actual heroes that the story does focus on. And yet you can't kill her off, because she is so sacred to so many fans that if you did kill her off, why are you killing her off? Just for some, you know, heart shed moment? Like, that doesn't justify the amount of pain that you know you're giving to the fan. Like, and I'm not the type of person, I hope people know this about all of us by this point, I'm not the type of person who feels like you should do things to give the fans what they do or do want. I think a lot of times fans think they want something until they get it, and then they realize it sucks, and it wasn't actually what's good for them or what's good for the story. That being said, at this point, because the story's not about Ahsoka, it doesn't serve the story to kill her off. And yet, I think there was enough teasing from Filoni that she'll come back. Like, if he just kind of left it alone at Celebration.
Right.
And the whole thing with the changing the t-shirts in between sets and stuff like that, then I think we probably could have just never seen her again and it would be fine. But I would put money on the fact that A, she's coming back, and B, she's going to live.
I think that unlikely alliance, Thrawn will recruit her to his greater purpose.
And you're taking notes so you can send these to Rian, right? Because he's not listening. You're going to have to write them and submit them.
I may or may not have already had a conversation with Rian Johnson. I'm just going to put may or may not. I cannot disclose. I think
Tim, you were drinking something during the show. What was in that mug?
Just tea.
Wood grain alcohol.
Imagine seeing, first of all, live action Ahsoka, and this whole, like, unlikely alliance between her and Thrawn to go fight whatever the big mystery is out in the end. I mean, how freaking mind-blowingly awesome. Ryan, seriously, dude, call me.
It would be awesome, except it's another thing. Like, would I like to see that? Yes. And I think that this defines an example logical of not giving fans what they think they want, because it's not good for them. I think I want it, and yet I know better. I know that yeah, that's just... Yeah.
But, you know, let me ask you this, though. Where's the payoff in having Ahsoka come back without having anything, and have her live, without having any interaction with her and Vader outside of Rebels?
What you do is you have her come back after the climax at the end during the goodbye scene.
That arc is done. She has already... Her and Anakin slash Vader have already... They've each had their closure. She has right. seen he's turned. He's a monster. He is no longer yeah, Anakin. Yeah. He has already made his peace with her that she was a traitor and she abandoned him. And that's they're done. They're done. There's nothing right, but I mean, else.
There's still that
what if she comes in and helps Ezra and or Kanan escape in the final confrontation with Vader and the Emperor?
And it could happen, but then what? I mean, is and not casting stones to you guys, because there were a lot of good ideas, but through this list we said, okay, hero's death, hero's death, hero's death. Is she gonna be added to the list of no. she's gonna, you know, have this self-sacrificing hero's death?
No. Nope.
Or is she gonna
she
get
comes
convinced?
In, rescues them, they go to Canto Bight, they just live happily ever after.
There you go.
You know.
Or suddenly does she get picked up by Thrawn and Thrawn says, because Ahsoka's pretty logical and Thrawn obviously is ultra logical. And he says, there's this freaking threat out here. You might not like the Empire, but this is worse. And we can.
Yeah, I don't see that. I don't know.
Tom, back me up. What do you got?
I'm having visions where it's like suddenly the Rebels finale is rated TVM, like MA.
Right,
like
right.
No little right. kid can watch it. No, my problem. Filoni is one of the smartest human beings on the planet, and bar none, one of the greatest storytellers, that television has, right? And I would, anyhow. But he is smart enough to not write himself into a corner. And I think if you bring Ahsoka back on screen, I don't know, as creative and genius as he is, I don't know what you do with her. Because if she lives after a final showdown, there is no way that Vader doesn't go hunt her down. And I think to a certain extent, it waters down everything in A New Hope. The interactions between him and Obi-Wan and all that, and really, all the entire storyline of the original trilogy. I think he is perfectly content to be coy with the fan base and to leave it at that phenomenal end scene where it's a question mark. Because to Vader limps away from that fight thinking that she's probably dead, right? So he doesn't have a reason to go hunt her down. If she comes back suddenly and proves that she's still alive, either A, she dies, and that's really traumatic for the fan base, and really not much of a payoff, I don't think. I don't want to see her come back just to get struck down, even if the duel is really cool. Or B, she lives, and we're like, I'm sitting here like, where's, show me the story where Vader's going to go kill her now. Because he's not going to let her escape a second time.
So you think she's going to remain as basically Schrodinger's Togruta?
Yeah, I think this is the Rebels. We had all of these. We talk about The Last Jedi being plagued by all of these fan theories where folks got wrapped around the axle, really wanting and expecting stuff to happen that didn't happen, whether it's Luke, Rey, whatever. I think this is the Rebels version of that. I think, it's going to be – there's no way to satisfy everybody.
Sure. That's fair.
But to the biggest, I think the safest way to play it, and the way that honors her character the best, is to leave her ambiguous.
That's interesting.
Now, you mentioned Filoni, and you also mentioned, you don't know what you would do with her. I don't know what I would do with her either. But I think Filoni knew. I don't think he brought her back in earlier in the series without knowing in advance exactly what he was going to do with her. I think he waited
absolutely
until he knew definitively before bringing her back in. I don't think it was, oh, here's an opportunity. I can put Ahsoka in here. We'll figure out where she ends up later. I think she did not appear until he had her storyline mapped out.
Definitely.
So I think we're going to get some sort of resolution at the end. My prediction, if I had to settle on one, would be that she doesn't fight anybody. And like I said, she's in a goodbye scene at the end, enough that we know she survived. And she, it's kind of what you said earlier about the kind of riding off into the sunset at the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I think it's, we're just not going to know where she's going. And Tim, I understand the whole teaming up with Thrawn thing in the sense that, you know, all joking about it aside, we go back to the Purge. If there are Jedi left, we either need a really good excuse as to why both the Emperor and Vader doesn't find them, and that's getting harder and harder to do, or they need to be out of the picture. And really, the only out of the picture at the moment is the Outer Regions. And so that's why, you know, it sounds silly and stuff, but the only way to make it work is to get them out. We already kind of feel like Thrawn's going to go out there anyway, so either they're going to go with him, which I think is really kind of stretching things, or they're going to go chase him, maybe. He gets recalled to Coruscant. He gets shipped out to the Outer Regions. They discover that that's going on. They follow him. And that's the end of the story that we get on them. Never to be seen again. Vader has nobody to hunt down because they're off in a completely different galaxy, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
I like that. I would be on board with a scene like that. Something like, you know, say Hera is one of the last survivors from this battle or something like that. And Ahsoka comes in on like an unregistered freighter, picks her up. She's back to her, you know, life. Living below the radar, not connected to the Force, but comes in one last time to help out.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. I think this thing with Ahsoka is probably just as pivotal as Thrawn and Kanan and Ezra. You know, three of them because they are Jedi-ish. And then Thrawn, because we see so much more potential in Thrawn, and I just can't imagine that they're going to cut him off here. So,
well, you know, the problem is they have a lot of things to wrap up and a lot of things to kind of, that we want to see at least. And they only have what, 3.5 hours worth of airtime to do it in.
I mean, between February 19th
and March 5th is 3 weeks. And the last one is, you know, an hour and a half, and you figure commercials into that. So how much screen time do we actually have?
it seems
almost an impossible task to get everything we want out of this series.
Yeah. So, I think just to kind of wrap up that topic, definitely want to have a call out to our listeners and our folks on Slack. We'd love to hear what your thoughts and theories are about these characters, or maybe there's some other characters that we've missed. I mean, there's obviously a lot of other characters in Rebels, but, you know, we just didn't think them to be major enough to list them. But what you might think certain characters' fates are, and if we're going to see them again, or if not, how they are going to be fading into the sunset. Every episode for the last few months, we have kind of introduced this fun facts and trivia section into our episode here. And oftentimes we kind of like to do a stump the host thing. So we kind of rotate through, and one of us will come up with some kind of trivia question and ask the others. With this one here, this was just something that I kind of came across. And just a fun fact that I wanted to throw out there, which has a little bit of irony, I think, to what we saw in the story of The Last Jedi. So there's a historian, an author, published author, Thomas Cahill, who has written a lot on the history of Christianity, and he's tied a lot of it to Ireland and their practice of Christianity. And according to him, Skellig Michael, which is the island which we saw as Octu, where Luke kind of hermited up for a while, it was once home to a medieval era Irish monastery who is they kind of self-proclaimed that they were saving civilization by rescuing some ancient Christian books.
The sacred texts.
Yeah. So it's really, you know, very much parallels the sacred texts that that Luke hoarded into the mystical tree. I don't know if this was intentional. It seems to be too close to history to not be intentional. But it kind of makes you wonder what Rian Johnson's thoughts were there. So yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It really is a neat tie-in to real world.
Yeah. So we've run a while here. We've had some good discussions. Tom, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
You brought, I think, some really cool perspective to a lot of topics, as well as some expertise.
And you made Eric very happy too.
Thank you so freaking yeah. much, dude. I am so happy right now. I can't even begin to tell you.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely. You know, you're welcome back. I think to, you know, join us on Echo Base at any time. Yeah, it does get a little chilly here. You may want to bring a spare Tauntaun that you can kind of crawl into if it gets too cold. They do smell bad on the outside and the inside. Just, you know, fair warning.
Yeah, that's to be expected.
It's how they roll. So, Lou, take us out of here.
Yeah, at that point, I think we are ready to wrap this thing up. If anybody has any questions for us or any kind of, you know, feedback on topics we discussed tonight, as Tim said, you know, certainly send us an email, echobase@randomchatter.com is the best way to do that. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the characters for Rebels. And if you want to, you know, get 100% accuracy on that, if you send that email after the finale, you'll have all the answers. So
spot you know, on.
There you go.
Eric?
Oh, I guess it's me.
Yes.
All right. You can find us online on Facebook at facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. You can find us on Twitter at Random Chatter. That's the Twitter account for the entire network. For this show, it's Echo Base Podcast. And for the rest of us, you can find me on Twitter at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. Tim, where can we find you?
It's at Qui-Gon Tim. That's Tim with two M's.
All right. And Lou, where can we find you?
Just my name. It's at Lou Secchi, LOUSECKI.
All right. And Tom, I want you to give us any social media you want to get out there to people, as well as your blog again, because I think that, especially after this episode, I think people would be really interested in reading your two articles on Poe. Probably your other articles too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I assure you the articles are grim. They have no humor in them. They will just really darken your day. Now, you can find me on Twitter at Thomas L. Harper. So that's Thomas, and then the letter L as in Lime or Larry, and then Harper, HARPER, Thomas L. Harper. And then it's thelegalgeeks.com. I occasionally podcast with them. We kind of break down. I come on to talk Star Wars stuff. We just actually recorded a live episode out at Disneyland. You can hear the Matterhorn and the monorail. But we break down legal issues on the Star Tours ride. So if you've been to Disney World or Disneyland and you've ridden Star Tours, we talk about the kind of legal trouble that R2 and C-3PO are going to be in as a result to some crazy battlefields. So, yeah, nice. But reach out. I love to interact. So find me on Twitter.
Awesome. Awesome. We definitely recommend people follow you and your stuff. I like I said, I'm just so happy about the Poe thing. I can't wait to read the article. All right. So you can find the rest of our shows over at randomchatter.com. Of course, we've got the main Random Chatter show. We've got Movie Rampage. We've got Getting Sidetracked. We've got some microcasts for people who want some shorter fare. And one of our other Star Wars shows, Aren't You a Little Short for a Podcast? So check all of those out, randomchatter.com.
And certainly be sure to spread the word and support us. You know the spiel, friends, family, neighbors, coworkers, total strangers. You know, you see someone wearing a Star Wars shirt and strike up a conversation. If, you know, ask them if they listen to any podcasts, see what they listen to, let them know what you listen to. Certainly be sure to include us in that list, like, you know, top of the list. We like to have listeners. We've had some great growth in the network and our listener base. We've heard from a lot of new listeners lately, which is really cool. So, you know, please certainly spread the word and support us. It helps a lot. It's very encouraging to us, and you know, we love it. Also helps if you leave some cool reviews, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get your podcast from. Click on all the stars, write in some real compelling narrative. What would really encourage people to come listen to us? And then lastly, hey, patreon.com/randomchatter. We like to get some financial donations. It helps us to keep the lights on around here. That's what I was trying to say. Which is sometimes tough here at Echo Base. You know, the generator needs fuel. You know, we oftentimes don't get sunlight, so the solar cells don't work, and you know, they get covered in snow. We have to buy new Tauntauns. It's amazing. I was gonna say,
we need more Tauntauns. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly we burn through Tauntauns when it gets cold out. People like to snuggle up to them, and well, anyway. So patreon.com/randomchatter. And of course, the great thing is you give to us and we give back to you, not only in the way of our regular shows, but also in some other ways. So even just that dollar a month, which is the minimum contribution, gets you access to our Slack community, which is a great time. You get to speak with and interact with us and with other hosts and with other fans. And as you go up in there in the levels, you get access to some premium and exclusive content and all sorts of other things. You know, it's just a cool thing, and it really creates a great community. And we certainly appreciate the contributions that helps keep us going.
The music you hear in this podcast is the Imperial March by Celldweller and the Force theme by Scandroid.
I did not hear any music through this whole podcast.
No, but have you been hearing the voices again? That's the question.
He probably has been. Yeah. On that note, we're getting out of here.
We're not even real, doors. Tim.
This whole thing is in Tim's head, yeah. We're closing the blasters. We're getting out of here, guys. We'll see you next week. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Epo. Let me start that again.
Start that again, Epo Base.
Oh, that's great.
We are
I'll start. Here, Tom. That's a 5-yard penalty
on Philly.
Back to the line.